Good morning, everyone. It is 8:32 a.m., June 19, 2026. This is an informal hearing on case number RC-26-177, informal hearing of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. By the way, I'm Randy Christman, joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugen-Hoffert and Jill Kringstad. Staff and company officials. And I said the case number. What's that?
The case number.
RC-26-177. And I always try and point this out when we do informal hearings, but especially in this case, because this is usually a public utilities kind of a hearing, and they're used to it. But I know not everyone with the current applicant is used to this process. But it seems like a good process for getting this information on the record for a complex decision. And so the informal hearing process is only for undisputed information. If we get into a dispute about information, we have to stop it and schedule a formal hearing where people are sworn in and advocates on both sides can be there. In this case, I'm quite sure that there will be some conversation for which the company has filed trade secret protection. And so what I'd like to do is deal with the basic information of the case as much as possible. And then whatever else needs to be discussed in a closed session, we'll stop the broadcast, we'll stop the recording and start a separate recording and deal with the trade secret protected stuff and then come back into open session and finish out. And so I would urge commissioners and staff, we need to be cautious when asking questions that we don't divulge something that is potentially protected in the form of a question. And company, if a question you feel can't be answered without divulging something that shouldn't be, say that and we can hold off on that part. However, I also would warn you, if you try and make everything trade secret protected, then we risk the chance of someone protesting it and the Attorney General potentially opening up a lot of information that we would have otherwise protected. So you don't want to overdo it either. When we get to that point, I'll go through on the record the legal authority for the confidential session. I will just say the last kind of opening comment from me other than that is this is a different type of financial assurance situation than what we've dealt with in the past. More requires a more complex review, I would say, and a learning situation for all of us, and thus this kind of unique situation. Commissioner Haugen-Hoffert, did you have any opening comments?
No, I don't.
Commissioner Kringstad?
No.
Okay. At this point, I'll have go around the room and have everyone introduce themselves for the record, and then we will turn it over to the company for a presentation.
Good morning. Chris Martins, legal counsel for the commission.
Adam Renfin, Commission staff.
Jonathan Emmer, Director of the Reclamation Division.
Christopher Fries, legal counsel for Falkirk Mining Company.
David Straley with NACO.
Jessica Bell, REMC Assets.
Lindsay Remick, REMC Assets.
Good morning, Craig Hansen with Bank of North Dakota.
Thank you. Okay, whoever's taking the lead, Mr. Straley, looks like that's you. Go ahead.
Great, thank you, commissioners.
And if I could just say one thing, Commissioner Christman, that I have my laptop in my office that at some point has information on it that I'll need to go fetch
Can we just have someone bring it down for you?
Or okay. Thanks.
Is it right on your desk?
Yep.
Okay, good morning. Thank you, commissioners and staff, for meeting with us today. In addition to myself, David Straley from NACO Natural Resources, on behalf of Falkirk, we have Christopher Fries, and from Rainbow Energy, we have Lindsay Remick and Jessica Bell here today. We look forward to this productive working session to help you better understand our permit application to self-bond at the Falkirk Mine. Before we get into the specifics, I would like to start with a few upfront comments. I think it'll help us today prepare for a more productive dialogue. First, I would like to start by saying thank you to your staff. We want to commend each of them for their individual and team efforts they have put forward thus far. They've been attentive to our requests, very cordial to work with, maintaining professionalism throughout this process. We really appreciate that and want that to be recognized. Second, there's a lot of detail today that you're going to be going through, and we want to make sure you're receiving information that is both accurate as well as detailed as you would like. However, we also ask that any specific requests or any questions related to the financial information of our applicant or its guarantor be held in executive session. We have requested confidentiality of the financial information and other proprietary data that to be held to high standards in law provided for under the North Dakota Century Code and Administrative Code. But we are also willing to answer any and all those questions you may have related to that financial information provided. Next, we plan to present the overview of the application process and the requirements and obligations that are outlined under both the law and administrative code. We will explain how we meet the requirements and plan to walk through how we came to that conclusion. I want to point out this overview is not meant to be exhaustive, but rather I intend to focus on some highlights that we believe are of interest to the commission and staff. You may find that questions to what I deem as smaller but necessary items, such as data that's in the detailed forms, can easily be addressed and answered by your staff. To date, I believe your staff has covered most of those items, but if there are any specifics, we can address it here today as well. Lastly, before the overview, I would like to cover a few items that and names that we have previously covered with your staff and we believe that are not contested or at issue. I want to highlight them so as to provide some upfront color as it may help each of us digest information faster as we discuss issues today. Names and entities. I think it best to define the legal structure of the applicant and the guarantor as defined by law. The Falkirk Mining Company, and you'll hear me today calling them Falkirk, is the owner-operator of the Falkirk Mine. It's a pretty simple one. They are the applicant for this permit. So when you hear us discuss as Falkirk or the applicant, we're referring to Falkirk. Falkirk is a wholly owned subsidiary of North American Coal. REMC Assets LP is the guarantor. And I'll say that again, REMC Assets LP is the guarantor and was a special purpose entity formed specifically for the purchase of Coal Creek Station and the HVDC transmission system previously owned and operated by Great River Energy since 1980. We have previously reviewed this legal structure with your legal counsel, Chris Martins, but again, we're happy to address any specific issues you may have. And please note, there is no ownership or control between or among these two separate and distinct entities. The relationship that Falkirk has with Rainbow is through a contract to supply fuel to Coal Creek Station. Now, all that said, I would like to outline and cover the obligations under North Dakota Administrative Code 6905.2, 1205.1. If you'd like to follow along, I'm going to go through the entire section of Administrative Code as required by law under Section 1 in order to self-bond in North Dakota, a coal company or its guarantor must A, designate an agent for service of process in the state. And of course, we start with probably the easiest one. You'll find that documentation of that obligation in our application was marked confidential on page 3 under self-bond SB 9503-1. And I'll refer to the tabs as we go here. I'll be referring to several of those tabs. So as you have that major application in front of you, those tabs are what we've marked. And I'll be referring to those. If any time you want me to slow down or stop, just please, I want to make sure you get to the right area. So for the first one, agent service of process, it'll be marked under confidential under tab 3 under self-bond SB 9503-1. excuse me. Part B. The applicant has been in continuous operation as a business entity the 5 years preceding the application. This also, we believe, is a fairly easy one to verify, and I'm confident your staff has reviewed the documents filed at the North Dakota Secretary of State's office. And for your reference today, the guarantor registered with the North Dakota Secretary of State on March 2nd, 2021, making that obligation met as well. Part C. Submits financial information in sufficient detail to show one of the following. Number one, which is not worthy today, but it has an applicant as a current rating of A or higher. And we are not requesting that under this metrics. However, parts two and three, we meet both of those, and I'd like to cover those real quickly. The applicant has a tangible net worth of at least $10 million, a ratio of total liabilities to net worth of 2.5 or less, and a current ratio of, in a ratio of current assets to current liabilities of 1.2 or greater. You will find what's marked under confidential tab 2E, again, confidential in tab 2E, that the guarantor has met all three of these requirements under subsection 2, which is a tangible net worth more than $10 million, a ratio of total liabilities to total net worth that is less than the required 2.5 maximum ratio, and that the guarantor is also a ratio of current assets to current liabilities greater than the 1.2 minimum requirement. Because these are marked confidential, we ask that any questions related to this area, if any, are done in executive session. Number three, the applicant's fixed assets in the United States total at least $20 million, and the applicant has a ratio of total liabilities to net worth of 2.5 or less, and a ratio of current assets to current liabilities of 1.2 or greater. Please note, as marked confidential under tab 2E, that our guarantor has fixed assets in the United States that is much larger than the $20 million minimum, and similar to subsection 2, our guarantee meets those same ratio tests. And again, I would just like to clarify that under subsection 1E, the applicant is only required to meet one of those three subsections. In the case before you, we meet the requirements under both the second and third subsections. D, the applicant submits, number one, financial statements for the last complete fiscal year audited by independent certified public accountants, and a report containing the accountant's audit opinion or review opinion of the financial statements with no adverse opinion. And part two, financial statements for completed quarters of the fiscal year and additional information requested by the commission. Please note that under the application in front of you, what contains what is marked confidential under tab 1D and 2D as the financial statements for the last complete fiscal year 2025 audited by a reputable agency. I'm also going to hand deliver to you today what has been marked confidential for the most recent quarterly financial statements for the current year. This is the latest required by law and should be considered as part of the application. I believe that we provided this to staff in the last day or two. Please note that the audited financial statements are issued by an independent third-party major accounting firm using GAAP accounting standards. Damn, these are right now. Thank you. Commissioner, thank you for the question, and thank you, Jessica, for handing those out. It is in addition to what you received. So as part of our, we've been working on this application with your staff for approximately, we're going on with more detail in the last 3 months, but really for the last 6 or 7 months prepping. And this is actually the second requirement. So we're required by law to provide you full audited financial statements for the year and then the latest quarter. So this is our latest quarter in essence of time, not to, I'll say it's not as controversial or not as detailed information. We didn't want to provide the staff with the first quarter only to find later that after a little bit of time goes on, when we actually filed the application, to give them a different quarter. So we tried to avoid the confusion by just providing this information at this time. So it's required by law. It was an intent to actually avoid the confusion, but you're sure happy to receive any other information you request.
Commissioner, to your point, I do believe that Jonathan did provide a copy yesterday, so it should alert.
Okay, thank you.
How long into a quarter does it take until those get completed? Like, is this just a recent completion for the first quarter or what?
Yep. We typically complete our annual audit within 90 days after year end, and then the quarterly statements, which are not audited, but you'll notice on the top there, do provide a certification from our controller. Those are completed within 60 days after the end of the quarter. And those dates comply with all of our bank covenants as well. It's a typical time frame. So 60 days would have been the end of May.
So almost most of the time when someone's making a decision on them, another quarter, like in a week, another quarter will have come to an end. But
that's correct.
So that's probably always going to be the case.
Yeah, Commissioner,
thanks for the time. It'll be the case.
Yeah, thank you for that. It is exactly some of the complications your staff has to go through and keep track of. But in order to keep them updated, it is required by law. And that's why we wanted to provide that today, of course. I just have a few more comments left, and then we'll start the bigger questions. Number two, subsection 2 describes in detail more obligations of the applicant or the guarantor, some of which I have just reviewed for completing the reclamation plan. Number 3, the total amount of outstanding and proposed self-bonds for surface coal mining and reclamation operations may not exceed 25% of the applicant's or the third-party guarantor's tangible net worth in the United States. And I would like to point out that if you could reference what has been marked confidential tab 2E, you can see that the guarantor meets that obligation as well. Excuse me. In this application, we've and executed the binding indemnity and self-bond agreements that meet the obligation under Section 4 of the Administrative Code. We can, or your staff can, answer any questions that you have about these documents as well. I would note that we or staff must fill in the effective date on that application, so we still have that to do, but your staff is good. They're not going to miss something like that. Under Section 5, we are also obligated to update the PSC on our financial information each year. Lastly, Section 6 requires that we maintain ongoing and continuous financial health to meet these obligations going forward, and that we must, quote, notify the commission immediately and post an alternate bond should any of these metrics ever be out of compliance. That is our outline of the obligations of the permit under North Dakota Administrative Code 69.05.2-12.05.1. And this application meets or exceeds the requirements for self-bonding contained within the North Dakota Administrative Code and the Century Code. Again, as a reminder, we have provided audited financials and disclosures for the most recent year, most year-end marked confidential in our application. These are protected from public disclosure under both state law and the Administrative Code. In closing, the legal standard is whether the applicant and guarantor satisfy the obligations, financial metrics, and requirements established in the law, which is contained in the North Dakota Administrative Code. And as you can see, this application for self-bond clearly meets and, in fact, far exceeds the obligation, financial metrics, and requirements of the law and must be approved. We look forward to answering any questions you may have. Thank you.
Is that that's the entire presentation? The rest is just Q&A?
Yes, Commissioner. Thank you.
Usually our presentations are longer, so yeah. In going through the application, so there's a Falkirk indemnity agreement for the collateral bond and for the self bond. And then one indemnity agreement and validation and separately from REMC. But that's because the collateral bond is just with Falkirk, where the self bond part, that's the part that is the REMC part that is appendix 2A and then the validation on 2B, that is for the self bond part, the larger portion, right?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's correct, and that's what the law requires.
Yeah. Okay. Talk a little bit about the timing of continuous operations. I mean, it's getting close to 5 years. It's 4+ of when.
Yeah.
Falkirk's letter of credit with Bank of North Dakota took effect, and that's my understanding is that's when you took over operations of the facility. So how is it that filing something at Secretary of State's office is operations, not taking the keys and operating a plant?
Yeah, I think, yeah, Commissioner, thank you for that question. And as the, I think what you're referring to, I just want to make sure we get a very detailed record here as best as possible, but 6905.212.5.1 under number one, part B, the applicant has been in continuous operation as a business entity for the 5 years preceding the application. So I think there may be some idea that, you know, how have we made sure that we're in continuous operation as a business entity for 5 years? I think there's one and only one objective test, and that is you file with the Secretary of State, which has the official business record of the date. You'll find that the same people, the same entities, the same employees, for the most part. I don't mean every single employee has been there for longer than 5 years, but you're going to find that that is the background of which Falkirk and REMC Assets has been in continuous operation as a business entity for 5 years. I don't think you can parse out and piecemeal the portions of that reg alone. So I do think the only objective test is that is the law, and that clearly we meet that objective by having filed with the Secretary of State since March 2nd, I think it was, of 2021. I don't know if others have something to add there.
So, and I which section were you just referring to?
Commissioner, thank you. It's 6905.212.05.1, and then the number one, part B. And if you'd like, Commissioner, I'm happy to read it in just so everybody's on the same page. As yeah. It says, I'll back up to part one.
I've found it here now.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner.
So earlier, and I know it's a different section, but as far as just intent of the law, in 6905.212, dealing with the performance bond. Mm-hmm. There are things laid out that are necessary. Correct. And then when you get on page two, it requires that the applicant and the guarantor must meet continuous operations, doesn't it?
Yeah. Could you just, so I got, and I'm referring to exactly where you're at. Which number is that, Commissioner?
9B.
9B. If you give me just 1 minute. I'm not sure I follow your question, Commissioner. I think 9B relates to if a partnership, each general partner in its parent organization or principal investor, and then it defines what a principal investor or parent organization is.
Commissioner, I know in 69 5.2-12-05.1, subsection 2 is the section that makes the requirements.
Yeah, that. Thank you. Did you get that section number?
And is that?
Yeah, I can maybe try, Commissioner. Yes, in that subsection 69 5.2-12-5.1. Subsection 2, there are additional requirements that both the applicant and the guarantor need to meet the preceding qualifications. And of course, Falkirk Mining Company meets that five-year rule that you're discussing. And REMC Assets also does, because they, when they filed the Secretary of State's registration, they became a business entity operating their business. The acquisition of assets happened a year later. So the continuous operation of the business entity begins when you file that business entity with the Secretary of State. Even though those operations shifted when the assets were acquired, the business entity was still in continuous operation for that full five-year requirement. And I think Lindsay has a couple things she wants to add.
Yes, thank you. Commissioners, I think what I would like to add here is a third-party guarantor can be any party according to the law. It doesn't even need to be a party that has a contract like we do with Falkirk. So, for example, completely unrelated entity could step in and act as the guarantor here. So I would like to not make sure we distinguish between the applicant and the guarantor. And the guarantor is not operating Falkirk Mine. The guarantor is standalone. And in the, like Jessica mentioned, would the marker there would be that Secretary of State.
Mr. Chairman, can I add to that too, just on what Lindsay just said? I mean, the law says the applicant has been in continuous operation as a business entity. It does not say it has to operate a power plant, it has to operate a coal mine. There's no requirement for what the business entity has to do. It's just it has to be a business entity for 5 years.
But I think we can also distinguish between exist and operate, though. I mean, they use the word operate. They don't use the word exist. So I guess maybe, is it fair to say that REMC Assets was active in the acquisition? Is there anything you can provide with regard to actual activities of the existing entity that led up to the acquisition of the assets or the transfer of the assets?
Yeah, I can speak to that. Thank you for that question and make that clarification. Absolutely, 100%. There are always due diligence activities, negotiations. We worked on the acquisition of Coal Creek Station for close to 2 years before it actually closed. So actually, we had created other entities along the way, and then the corporate structure with REMC Assets being the owner of Rainbow Energy Center Rainbow Energy Center actually formed before REMC Assets. REMC Assets became the parent of the subsidiaries about a month later when we formed that entire corporate structure. But, you know, even before registering with the Secretary of State, those conversations, that due diligence had begun in the summer prior to that even. So, when you acquire assets, there is operations going on to do that due diligence. That helps.
Show what you mean by operation. Then I think of operation as actual plant up, running, not.
You bet. You bet. I can thank you for that question, Commissioner. In this case, RMC Assets is a holding company. So the operations, in my opinion, would be to acquire assets. So as we began working on the acquisition of those assets, that holding company is operating. Operations can be, it can be white collar, it can be blue collar. In this case, it was working administratively to acquire assets.
Yeah, if I could add, Commissioner, and just to provide a little more color to that, I think most of us do jump to the conclusion of operations because we as coal miners refer to the operations as physically using equipment to move earth to harvest a valuable resource. And I think in this context, it is absolutely a business entity of what that business is doing. And the business, just like we do, we have operations like I referred to. We also have operations such as accounting and engineering and permitting and general HR issues. That is the business activity as a whole. And we're pretty convinced that's exactly what it is. Otherwise, you'd have a really tough time as regulators. We think of, well, when does your operations of dirt moving, when did that start? There's more of a gray area. We think the bright line rule is continuous operation as a business entity for 5 years. And there's no other way to really read that in our opinion.
So I don't know what would happen if we approved this and you move forward and OSM doesn't approve it. And I know at least three of you are aware. But just in case, Lindsay, in case you're not, we operate basically under approval of OSM on pretty much every move we make. And so if we approved this and you went ahead with it and made other business decisions and such, and they deny it, and then we're back, and then I don't know what your status would be with the Bank of North Dakota or with other, I suppose at a price one can always get straight bonding. But let me just point out something that worries me and to see if it worries you. And this was based on the preliminary application because the question was discussed there before the final application came in. But Mr. Fleischman with OSM, who is the Denver Field Vision Chief, I'm not going to try and put words into his mouth. They had other things going on, and you all had expressed urgency with this. And so they did ask for like preliminary thoughts on it from our staff, which provided them, and he is basically agreeing with those, not that they came up with these fresh. But, and I'm not quoting, but sort of shortening it, but it's very accurate, that 30 CFR Part 80.23 requires the applicant and the guarantor to be in continuous operation for 5 years. Appendix 2C fails to demonstrate that RMC Assets LP or Rainbow Energy Center LLC has been in continuous operations for 5 years. So what pause does that give you that his initial reaction was that this is concerning as well?
Yeah, Commissioner, I can take a stab at that and I'll let others chime in. I think number one is just like your initial reaction and your staff's initial reaction of, well, you haven't been in operations for 5 years. But read as a whole, as read as the actual statement in full, is an applicant has been in continuous operation as a business entity for 5 years. To me, I think it's just like Commissioner Haugenhoffert had not jumped to the conclusion, but your mind naturally goes there that you think you're in operations and it's your operating machinery. And that is, we just disagree that that is not what it is. It seems as though most want to jump to that conclusion right away. And it's not that it's wrong. It's we want to go back to the words of the actual code and show that we meet that. And to us, that is actual the dialogue. That's the conversation we have to have. That is the level of which we want to make sure you're educated. We want to make sure we're answering your questions fully. But I believe that's the best start for that. And then from there, you're right. Those are his review of your staff, their interpretation. And we'd like that chance. And I think that's what we're here today for, is to get that chance to really explain what that means, how that means. And I'm sorry, Mr. Commissioner, I have not read 30 CFR 80. But I'm thinking we have done a ton of research. Or I shouldn't say that. I've read it. It's just been a while since I have read it. I didn't pull it up on recall. But I know we have done a lot of research on the backside and showing how we read the statute has been thoroughly gone through on our side. And that's what we're here to make sure we're educating you, but also to answer those questions.
Mr. Chairman, can I add smacker of that very section 30 CFR 800.23 that you pointed out is actually more lenient on the 5-year
operations. Is it actually what?
More lenient on the 5-year operations. There's more flexibility under SMACRA than there is under the North Dakota code. So it allows, North Dakota stops at, the applicant has been in continuous operation for 5 years. The commission may allow a joint venture with less than 5 years. It stops at that sentence. 800.23 goes on to say, when calculating the period of continuous operation, the regulatory authority may exclude past periods of interruption. So they actually allow for a lot more flexibility in calculating that time frame than your code does. So I think it's a little bit difficult to argue that OSM could say this doesn't meet when SMACRA is actually more flexible than what we're having to meet here.
Okay.
So it I think it gives us more, it's better authority here under the 5-year rule than it is there. And it's hard to make that jump that SMACRA wouldn't allow it or that OSM wouldn't allow it. And beyond that, the language of SMACRA and the language of the North Dakota version of SMACRA allows a lot of flexibility for the commission. Language like, the commission can do what is necessary to carry out the purposes and provisions of the chapter and of SMACRA, to effectuate the purposes of the chapter, to take all action necessary and appropriate to secure the benefits for the state. I mean, there's a lot of language that gives the commission the authority to do it, even beyond what SMACRA does.
Okay. Then and someone else can come back to that more if they want, as far as the continuous operations requirements. I just want to make you aware of and give you a chance to respond. I know a bunch of the forms that you filled out that are included in the exhibits and the appendixes are our forms. There's been a transition where when we needed a form update, ITD used to just do it. Now we're supposed to do it ourselves, but the training hasn't been made available yet. There's some of these forms that are wrong, and I noticed it when I was on 3C, and I didn't go back to see how many other times it happens. But I guess the examples that I found in 3C, twice it lists whichever is, I think it's REMC Assets LP, as a corporation and not a partnership. And so at the end of the day, a bunch of this stuff is going to have to get re-signed and that sort of thing, because we can't make the forms yet. And so is that any?
Yeah, no, Commissioner, thank you for that. And we'll obviously review those. We found some of your forms, it could provide some more clarity in some of the, in just some of the most basic boxes. They're set up very generically, but it really doesn't make sense how some of them repeat themselves and or they just don't line up like we would like them to be, but that's not our job to do that. So, absolutely happy to work with your staff on making sure that we're getting the right information if we made a clerical error or something like that, but absolutely happy to do that. Thank you.
And so now with that, like knowing that there's that step, and I don't know how long that'll take till we can get those forms made where we can alter them, but I'm assuming not long. Tell me about the timing and urgency of this, because I sensed from staff, you were hoping for a decision last week already. This is a complex decision for us, and where are we at with timing and
Commissioner,
what, if I, like that impact. I know the answer to timing from everybody we deal with is always as soon as possible or yesterday or something like that. But realistically, do we have some time to work on some of these details?
Yeah, Commissioner, if I could, maybe I'll start if anybody's got any additional comments. Yeah, you're right, Commissioner. We're trying to balance. We know your staff has limited resources as well. We try to work through them with staff, with you guys as commissioners, trying to provide as much flexibility, but also with some of the urgency that we push forward with is not in a matter to urgently make a request and get it turned around. We absolutely expect and want you guys to make informed decisions. We feel really comfortable, and we as Falkirk's parent, NACO and North American Coal, that we've done these applications. We have other operations that we're not going to bring into today's fold, but that are very, very similar. And of course, they're just slightly different. And we need to make sure your staff are available for getting your heads wrapped around it, make sure you understand it completely. So we're probably more comfortable than you and your staff are, so which is why the urgency. But from an operations standpoint, I will say generically, and then I'm happy to answer with a little more detail in executive session, but generically, I will say what this application is holding up is opportunities for other more complex and bigger deals that can allow us to be not only provide more guarantee for the future and more stable operations, but also that we have other applications that are waiting on this application to be approved. So in a complex world, and I'll maybe turn some of that to your staff from the logistical issues of not only the self-bond, but what that is holding up in terms of other permits and things that we need turned around. And especially when it comes to a process with the federal government, those typically go a lot slower than we'd like. But the federal government right now and OSM
OSM.
Thank you. OSM is waiting actually on this application in order to approve another permit that we're waiting on that will hold up our operations. So time is of the essence. And of course, it's with the first day of summer here coming up, we look in terms of it's almost freeze up. We have to get these things done because once the topsoil freezes, we can't separate it from subsoil. So we go into a winter season where you're then delayed another 6 months. So there is a little bit of timing of the essence here. But of course, we're asking you to come to the table to help us understand and help yourselves understand this application and why it's the right thing and why I think it's the right decision. Now, again, in executive session, I give you a little more detail on the financials that are involved in that and some of the background.
Mr. Chairman,
answer your questions. Thank you.
David, I think it's publicly available information on the federal coal piece that I think we should talk about just for a minute, just to kind of give you an idea of the timing. So there is a federal coal tract or multiple federal coal tracts involved in this permit. And as you're well aware, that has taken quite some time to get that lease, 7 years going on seven now. So as you can imagine, when we apply for that lease 7 years ago, and we make operational decisions based on the timing we think that lease is going to come in, and then when we can actually mine because of when the lease actually gets issued, we're in a operational situation of timing is critical because it took so long to get that lease. And the way that process works is we have to apply for the federal coal lease. We cannot put that in our permit until we have the lease in hand. Once we get the lease in hand, then we have to come back to the commission to approve that permit to mine. So there's a timing issue of applying for the lease, getting the lease issued, coming back, applying for the permit, getting the permit approved, and then mining. And that is very critical right now in terms of timing because of the delay on the federal side.
Well, and if I could add, Commissioner, of course, all of those operations at Falkirk are very important to Rainbow to keep the cost of coal as low as it possibly can so that when we market our product, we can also provide fair cost to the market. And then I just wanted to go back to the urgency from Rainbow's perspective. And I don't know that we necessarily, it's hard to describe the urgency as we need it approved at the next commission meeting. It's better, I think, from my perspective to describe it as urgency as this is something that Rainbow Energy Center, REMC Assets, has been interested in taking advantage of since we took over ownership of the plant. Since the business entity was formed, it was something that we knew we were going to be able to qualify for, like other facilities have. And so it does feel a bit urgent, I think, having to go through all of these very detailed informations and difficult financials. Trust me, I have struggled as I have worked through this process as well. Financials are not my strong suit. But it is something that REMC Assets Falkirk has worked with staff on for the last 4 to 5 years to get to the point where we can put this application in front of you. And so, yes, we want to urge approval, but we hope that we have been thoughtful about how and when we've put that application in front of you.
I want to go back just a second kind of to the previous discussion. So just like we talk about how there's generally accepted accounting principles, which to Lindsay and I are probably, they're probably nearer and dearer to our hearts than some of others in the room. But the definition of like continuous operations, is there a generally accepted definition of continuous operations? Like just for the record that we could have to reflect back on?
Mr. Chairman, I haven't looked through the Century Code elsewhere to see if it's defined anywhere. It's not defined here. I don't know, Chris, if you've looked anywhere else.
Yeah, Commissioner, I did a pretty extensive, at least as much time as I had, I did engage some of the Westlaw AI tools to help do a survey of all jurisdictions to see if there was even any litigation where courts have opined. There is not. There's some, I guess, somewhat in the ballpark court cases out there that were very weakly persuasive at best and really doesn't even hit the issue on head. So it is, you know, for me, advising you, I'm going to look more as a factual determination of, you know, there's formation and then what activities, you know, happened after that kind of show some activity, you know, and we can discuss that more, you know, if we have additional questions about that.
I would say this, if I could, maybe just an example or two. I mean, so just thinking about NACO Industries and NACO Natural Resources, you know, the ultimate parent companies of Falkirk. So when you think about continuous operation, we're constructing a mine right now that has not, well, maybe it has in the last 2 months moved a piece of dirt. But prior to that, it's been 6 years, 7 years of permitting, well, geology, right? Environmental data, studies, permitting, equipment purchasing, equipment mobilizing. And finally, after like 7 years, we're going to move dirt, right? So to me, it would be hard to say that that business has not been in continuous operation for at least 7 years, even though we just maybe started moving dirt in March. I don't remember the exact date, but I mean, to me, that's one, especially in this industry where you have a very long lead time for permitting and all of those things, contract negotiation, fuel supply contracts, everything that you need to get in place prior to actually doing maybe ultimately what the business is doing, but it's all part of it. And I mean, maybe that's an example here that helps.
Yes, for me, it's, I guess it comes down, in my opinion, what is the primary business function of REMC Assets, and at what point was a authorized agent or general partner taking affirmative action forward to advance that business? I guess that's the definition I have floating in my head.
Go ahead.
Would you mind, Commissioner? Thank you. I would just like to speak to Commissioner Kringstad's comment and relate it to accounting, because in fact, you can set up a business on the Secretary of State and do nothing with it. I mean, that does not help my argument right now at all, but I'll point out that that entity was, I'd have to get the date for you, but in my mind, an entity starts business when it capitalizes that entity, when the partners put money at risk and put it into the entity, and we started keeping track of those books and records. So I could happy to get that date for you. I'm sure it's right around the date of the Secretary of State, but that at that point, our partners had
put money at risk into the business to start that due diligence program. So that maybe is a better argument than, because, I mean, maybe all of us who are entrepreneurial have set up partnerships or LLCs along the way and did literally nothing with them. So I could see that argument.
I think that information in the late file would be helpful to
absolutely.
Our record.
Absolutely. Be happy to provide that. I don't have it today, but I'll get that over to your staff right away.
I think at least for now, the rest of my questions are financial related. I'll turn it over to Commissioner Haugenhofer.
We clarified the continuous of operation, and I do like the idea of getting that financial information. I think all of mine will be for executive session.
And I'll just add, Ms. Remick, so you mentioned like the date that they made financial resources available. If there is other information along the way that helps make the case for operations that you're comfortable in providing, we're all about building a record.
Yep, absolutely. We'll look at that activity and provide what we can. Just for example, we started the carbon capture feed study even before we acquired Coal Creek Station's assets. So there are going to be purchase orders, there's legal fees, things like that, that'll signify that we were paying our bills and operating as a business.
Commissioner Greenstead?
I think the rest of mine are probably for executive session.
Can I ask for clarification? Brought up a comment about OSM looked at it and had heard about not meeting the 5-year operation, correct? Do they have a clear definition of what operation is, and have you met that requirement?
Yeah, I'll wait for our legal counsel to really give you the answer. But I think what we've testified before and we'll continue to go back to is there is no definition of, if you quote, continuous operation that we can find in the code, in the statute, in the CFR. And I think as Mr. Vries pointed out, is the federal code is actually a little more lenient than the state of North Dakota. This law and this administrative code is a little more restrictive. So, but we cannot find that definition.
Why do you think they have the concern?
I think it's, Commissioner, thank you for that question. I will jump to the same conclusion that I think you and others have jumped to, that same conclusion of it's as though they were read the words continuous operation as physically moving dirt and operating machinery. So I think we put those words into each other. And just like I'm jumping to that conclusion, I think the folks jumping to that conclusion are going to read it the same way. That's my speculation, and I assume that's exactly right. Which then is, I'll point back to, is coming back to, this is why you have these type of hearings. This is why you have these education sessions. It's to discuss and what we agree upon. And if I could just add one more piece back to what Ms. Remick had said, we've also have tons of employee hours that have been put in. I can tell you, reliving that sale and that transaction from March 2nd, actually before that, I mean, we spent literally 16 hours a day, multiple people working for that specific purpose. So as part of those activities in the continuous operation would be going to support that as well. But we'll work with your staff on that to what they need and what they'd like, and your legal counsel to make sure we're good.
Okay.
Commissioner, could I add to what David said, just to your question? I think, one, we believe we meet the requirements of SMACRA just as we meet the requirements of the North Dakota Code. I don't know why they made that comment. But second, maybe why they made that comment partially is OSM is much more familiar with market coal mines, right? Coal mines that mine coal, sell it on the open market. They don't have long-term contracts. They certainly don't have a 10, 20, 30, 40-year contract with the power plant that's adjacent to them. They might have a 5-year contract at best. So when OSM looks at continuous operation and when OSM looks at self-bonding, historically, they've looked at it with a much more different lens and focus than what we're able to look at it in North Dakota, where we have a much more long-term certain mining future versus a coal mine that's out there that might be self-bonding that may go in and out of business every few years because the market goes up and down, unlike our fixed price or management fee contracts where the price doesn't go up and down. We're not subject to market fluctuation. So I think maybe that might be why OSM looks at it a little bit differently.
Do you know how many states are still allowing new self-bonds?
Commissioner, no, I do not. I don't know if anybody else here has.
Because I understand that some states have stopped doing self, at least not necessarily discontinued the ones that exist, but aren't doing more. And
yeah,
and that there's a bill proposed to Congress to prevent it. But I, you know, a bill proposed to Congress is a lot different than one that passes. But it doesn't seem like the nation is moving toward self-bonding, if anything, moving away from it. So,
yeah,
but you don't know how many states allow it yet.
Mr. Chairman, this is a couple years old information, but I think at the time in 2023, it was Oklahoma, Arkansas, New Mexico, Illinois, Louisiana, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, Colorado, Utah, West Virginia. Now, those were the states that had language just like ours. I don't know if they still do. That's 2 years old, 3 years old. We could certainly find out. But I think you're right. There was a move 10 plus years ago away from self-bonding. That's kind of subsided and hasn't really been talked about as much lately, I don't think. I mean, it was talked about a lot.
I think there has been a decrease in that, so it'd be good to get information on how many states allow self-bonding.
Yeah, Commissioner, if I could provide just a little, Mr. Chairman, if I could provide a little color around that, if and I'll make this statement generically, is there has been movements to try to hurt the coal industry for decades. And if their proposals and these ideas would have allowed to gone forward, I would never have even started working in the coal industry 20-some years ago. And those ebb and flow. And I know there's political statements, political speeches. This is not a dig at politicians. It's some people's ideas of where they want to go. Sometimes, and since my entire career, they have not been able to actually get them enacted into law or code. So a political speech and an announcement of what they're doing is one thing. To actually change the code or change the law is another. And not that that's a relevant, but I think, Commissioner, I think you're right. You'll hear a lot of that. You'll see the articles during the Biden administration. I think they even tried to put an executive order out to not allow it. And I would disagree that that legally is not what he can actually do as the president of the United States. Rather, you got to change the code or you got to go through the process to change the code. And today, to this date, we'll find that we still meet the letter of the law. We still meet the administrative code and all the portions there too. Therefore, that's an allowance that you guys have the discretion and the authority to do that. So just a little more color on that. And Commissioner Haugenhofer, happy to provide some of those background pieces of whether they're statements or whether they're orders into the record if you'd like. And then the proposals, as you can see in the last couple of years, have been very favorable and very the exact opposite of what the Biden administration has been.
We have to pause for just a second here. Sorry about that. Just had to consult with attorney here on something. A second. Did staff, are there any other questions for the open portion of the meeting?
I wouldn't say a question, but just more of a follow-up to the five-year continuous operation, kind of what from that letter from OSM. I think a lot of the confusion came from Appendix 2C because it wasn't until yesterday REMC assets was not even listed in that appendix, and nowhere in there does it even give the date when the company was even formed. It's just very generic, and then basically it just says the facility, meaning Coal Creek Station, has been in operation for 5 years, but does not go into detail describing the operations of REMC assets.
Which appendix?
2C.
Lindsay.
Yeah, I would concur that the information we've discussed and the company sounds willing to provide would probably change that analysis potentially a little bit there.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. And if I could just put some color around that too, and thank you, Jonathan. That's exactly right. And this is portion of the application where we did get work with staff, receive some feedback, and actually go, oh, sorry, we probably jumped to the conclusion, or we jumped in as the operators and not the business structure. So as just like up front when I said the comments about defining who Falkirk is as the applicant and who Rainbow is, or REMC Assets LP as the guarantor, I think we're even a little guilty of that. We jumped to the using those names synonymously. So as you'll find, and we'll hope that staff will find also, that that is the background that we've provided. It's the section of code that describes that. It's pretty open-ended. And what we've tried to do was put in information of similar applications of the past so that you've got information on that company, the structure, et cetera. So thank you.
Okay. So Jonathan, you think that the new version would give them better background for reaching the conclusion that that five-year requirement is met?
Well, if it was updated to include the information we discussed today.
Okay. Anything else?
Well, I don't know if it's completely relevant here, but at least for our wind decommissioning rules, we only allow IPPs to self-bond if they have an A credit rating. And I would imagine if we go back and take a look at all of the IPPs, that even though we have these financial ratio and tangible net worth tests, they would go back and look at that to see if they did qualify. I guarantee they would all be able to qualify for that. And that was, I think, historically kind of made as an informal policy of the fact that we don't regulate them. So if that answers anything.
You're welcome to comment on that if you like, but
No, I guess, Commissioner, we'd start by saying, yeah, those rules are under, there is no OSM SMACRA rules for the wind industry at the federal level. And I guess we just point out that the law is the law, the code is the code, and it does allow for those provisions. So even though we wouldn't meet one of those tests currently, we still have the other two, and it, the law only requires one of those three tests be met. So I guess that'd be our statement.
Anything else in open session for now? But if along the way, we will come back into open session before we adjourn. But anything else for now? Okay, so these are fussy, so I got to get these words exactly right. This hearing is subject to open meeting laws. However, Falkirk Mining Company has provided applications for trade secret protection for specific information in case number PU-21-380. The legal authority for closing this meeting is North Dakota Century Code Chapter 4404, including North Dakota Century Code 4404-18.4 and 47-25.101, subsection 4. North Dakota Administrative Code Section 6902-0908 provides that if specific disclosure of confidential information is necessary during testimony, sufficient notice must be provided to clear the hearing room of those that are not authorized to participate. At this time, a motion would be in order to discuss the case in closed session rather than in an open meeting. Is there such a motion? Second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any other discussion on that? Sensing none, I will vote aye. Commissioner Haugenhoff.
Aye.
Aye.
So that passes unanimously. The closed portion of the meeting will be recorded. And I want to remind all commissioners to limit their discussion during the closed hearing to the announced topic. Any collective decision, collective commitment, or other final action by the commission must occur after it reconvenes in an open meeting. By the way, those of you in the back that are need to stay for the open meeting part, come on up because you need to introduce yourself into the microphone. The one exception to that about a collective decision would be unless final action is specifically required by law to be taken during the closed portion of the hearing. I don't anticipate that happening. So now we'll ask members of the public who are attending to to leave the meeting room and. Well, what time is it? Ten 15 estimated. That sound about right? A little half hour, you think?
Yeah, Commissioner, I think we're looking forward to maybe a little bit of a background, just like we did this opening session with some of the financial pieces that we'd like to explain, and then your Q&A. I would suggest 30 minutes to maybe 40 minutes at the very most.
Okay. I will say that I'll call the anticipated reconvening time to be 10:15. And the closed portion of our meeting will begin at about 9:42. Now, for those of you that are staying and have a role in this, would you please come up and state your name into the microphone, please? No, this is in the first recording because it needs to point out who all is staying.
Brandon Myron with the Reclamation Division, Environmental Engineer.
Warren Swenson, Reclamation Scientist.
Craig Hansen, Chief Banking Officer, Bank of North Dakota.
Brian Johnson, PSC.
Okay, with that. Oh, yeah, forgot about you, Matt.
Oh, okay.
Matt Kluzak, IT staff with PSC, and then technically upstairs monitoring the stream, we have Clayton Reed, IT staff, PSC.
Okay. And then the people in the room who were identified at the beginning of the hearing is who will be here. With that, we will stop the recording and the broadcast.